you've got the potential for failure, even if you got to the next step beyond where they went.
Did the United States miss an opportunity to reach out to North Korea? It's Thursday, February 22nd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Maldives' political crisis deepens. Racially charged politics in Australia. Celebrating Lunar New Year in the United States. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States has acknowledged that Vice President Mike Pence was to meet North Korean officials on the sidelines of the Winter Olympics February 10th, but it was scrapped by the North just 2 hours before, following Pence's criticism of its rights record. The vice president was going to meet the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and the nominal head of state Kim Yong-nam. On Tuesday, a Pence spokesman characterized the office as the North dangling a meeting in exchange for a softened message. He said had the meeting taken place, the vice president would have delivered an uncompromising message that the North must denuclearize, that the United States would not change its position or negotiate. Bruce Bennett is a senior international defense researcher at the RAND Corporation. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty such a prospect is surprising given North Korean pre-Olympic statements no such meeting would take place, and he described how they prefer to enter such talks.
For the North Koreans, you negotiate from a position of strength. You try to say that the other side is negotiating with you because they're giving in to you. And so when Vice President Pence does quite the opposite and is critical of North Korea's human rights record, there is no way in their culture that they can proceed with any kind of negotiation.
A Pence spokesman said the decision was made that if such talks took place, the U.S. would deliver an uncompromising message about denuclearization. What actually could have been covered in such a meeting?
The key there is the United States telling North Korea that, look, we're still serious about denuclearization, but North Korea is consistently saying that they're never going to happen. So you've got the potential for failure, even if you got to the next step beyond where they went. If they'd even sat down together, they would have been talking past each other, the U.S. wanting to talk denuclearization and the North representatives refusing to do so. For all the hype, there really wasn't much of an opportunity here.
Bruce Bennett said while it appears the North wasn't prepared to compromise, they also earlier indicate no talks would be considered. For Go Myung-hyun, research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, this was a missed opportunity.
I definitely think so. I definitely think the South Korean government was very much open about its desire for the United States and North Korea to sit down together for the occasion of the Olympics and talk about denuclearization. Because I think there's some sense in the South Korean government that there's a very small window opportunity right now to stabilize the situation in the Korean Peninsula after the Olympics. We know that the U.S. and South Korea agreed to postpone the joint military exercise because of the Olympics. But then the joint military exercise, which is very much opposed by North Korea, is going to resume right after the Olympics.
Go Myung-hyun said while both South Korea and the United States have indicated they are prepared to launch joint military exercises postponed until after the Olympics, the South may consider modifying them as a sign of its desire to keep alive the thaw in the peninsula tensions. Meanwhile, the U.S. cybersecurity firm FireEye said a North Korean cyber espionage group it calls APT-37, or Advanced Persistent Threat, which has hacked South Korean government and private sector targets, has expanded its attacks to Japan, Vietnam, and the Middle East in 2017. Its focus is gathering intelligence, not destruction or financial theft. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Indonesia quietly passes law to quash criticism of politicians. Political calculations led Vatican to agree with China on bishop appointment, according to analysts. South Korea official says General Motors offers $2.8 billion investment in South Korea over 10 years. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The president of the Indian Ocean Archipelago of the Maldives, Abdullah Yameen, is seeking a 30-day extension of his state of emergency, first declared February 5th and to last for 15 days. But with an opposition boycott, he's been unable to muster the minimum 43 votes in parliament for a quorum. The declaration was made so Mr. Yameen could annul a Supreme Court ruling reversing the convictions of 9 opposition leaders and ordering their release. His administration arrested 2 court justices, including the Chief Justice, other opposition leaders, and even a former president, Mamoun Abdul-Gayoom, charging them with trying to overthrow the government. David Brewster is a visiting fellow in strategic and defense studies at the Australian National University. He tells VOA he has little doubt the president will extend the state of emergency until the opposition is quashed in what he insists is a constitutional crisis.
Well, if there's a constitutional crisis, it was a crisis of his making by ignoring the rulings of the Supreme Court, essentially sacking the Supreme Court and arresting opposition leaders. So one could expect that they will continue to fight until there is at least some indication that he's willing to discuss a settlement or some other resolution of the problem. If there's a crisis, it's his crisis.
China, India, Britain, and the United States have all issued warnings against travel to the Indian Ocean island chain, which has luxury hotels, scuba diving, and tropical seas. David Brewster says the Maldives' tourism economy has been impacted amid hundreds of bookings canceled, and while India has intervened before, he tells VOA the current situation presents difficulties for New Delhi.
I have previously said they are in a very difficult position. They continue to be in a very difficult position. They would certainly like to get rid of Yameen. It's not clear that they have a pathway to do that. Last week, they instituted unscheduled naval and air exercises off the west coast of India as a warning to Yameen to negotiate. In the last 48 hours, the Chinese Navy has also entered into the Indian Ocean, although they seem to be a long way from the Maldives at the moment. But clearly, China is now an important factor in the crisis.
China enjoys a close economic relationship with Mr. Yameen and, long range, would like to establish security ties or even a security presence in the Maldives. Politicians in Australia are being accused of racist mischief-making over reports of gangs of young African migrants and refugees running amok in Melbourne. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said the situation was out of control. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports community leaders accused him of making inflammatory and inaccurate statements for political gain.
Fights and violent robberies involving young African migrants have prompted a stern response from Australia's Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull.
We are very concerned at the growing gang violence in Victoria, in particular in Melbourne.
In the state of Victoria, the Acting Assistant Police Commissioner Shane Patton said he was worried about escalating rates of crime.
Over December, we've seen a number of separate incidents which have cumulatively given rise to this whole issue of African youth offending. We've had an assault of a police member then occur on Boxing Day in High Point. That was a horrendous assault, to be kicked in the face whilst arresting someone and then to have a group of African youth gather around them.
Jason Wood, a federal MP in Melbourne and a former police officer, says his constituency has been racked by gang violence.
In some suburbs, I know in Clyde and Clyde North, there's been aggravated burglaries in 1 in 20 homes, which is quite incredible when you think about it. I've had families where African gangs, and we believe it'll be the Sudanese, have come back 2 or 3 times and terrorised the one family. The first occasion they kicked the door in at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Official statistics show that 1% of all offenders in Victoria last year were Sudanese-born. This migrant community makes up just 0.01% of the state's total population. And while the Sudanese are overrepresented in the crime figures, the number of offences is small. Zioni Walker and Fender from the African Australian Communities Leadership Forum believe some politicians and the tabloid press are exaggerating the problem of so-called gang violence by young migrants.
We should not be distracted by name-calling, political point scoring, or media sensationalism in trying to sell stories. We finally ask the media to demonstrate more responsible reporting on these difficult issues affecting our community and balance their reporting with the many positive stories that are happening within the African Australian community. A majority of African Australians have great stories to tell about their lives, about the positive contributions they make to Australia.
15-year-old Sudanese refugee Moniping Moniping says he and his friends are also wrongly accused of being troublemakers.
You see in the media, it says that, oh, Sudanese boys are doing bad stuff in Melbourne, robbing people, and then they think every Sudanese boy is the same around here. If you do something small, they make it look like, oh, something big. And then we go to the shopping centers and all that, they make it sound like, oh, we're going to steal and all that stuff, but we're not even going to steal, we're just going to buy stuff and leave, that's it.
The Sudanese aren't the only group of migrants to have found life tough in Australia. It can take generations to feel accepted. Just ask the Greeks, the Italians and the Vietnamese. They all endured hardships and discrimination when they first arrived, but are now well-established parts of a multicultural country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia. This news alert from VOA Asia. Malaysian police have arrested 10 suspected Islamic militants who are trying to establish a foothold on the island of Borneo. They are suspected of aiding the movement of militants between the eastern state of Sabah and the southern Philippines, a hotbed of Islamic insurgency. A hot place to visit every day is VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, many Asian countries are now celebrating the Lunar New Year, also known as the Spring Festival in China and also called the Chinese New Year by many people. It's a multinational holiday in many Asian countries and it lasts about 2 weeks. But how is this festival celebrated in the United States? VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles, a city with one of the largest Asian communities in the U.S.
People are flocking to Chinatown in the heart of Los Angeles to experience the sights and sounds of the new year and welcoming in the year of the dog.
It's very important for us to celebrate Chinese New Year because of our Chinese heritage.
In its 119th year, this Golden Dragon Parade has become a Lunar New Year tradition for many people, including Henry Hua, who has been watching this parade since 1980. But this is not his only tradition of the season.
We would decorate our house with flowers, lights. We would do all that to give it a festive New Year's feeling, and then loved ones will celebrate with us and give red envelopes. At night, we would gather together.
In Hong Kong, we have relatives. In L.A., we have friends. So it's you know, just a lot of more culture, you know, different type of people celebrating Chinese New Year.
Different types of people, all with an appreciation for Chinese culture. Wishing everyone a happy and prosperous New Year in Mandarin, Avery Shaw to learn his Mandarin in school.
It's just about bringing the family together and, you know, honoring the Chinese culture and just keeping the tradition.
For many families attending this parade, the hope is that their children will gain an appreciation for the annual cultural festival and continue the tradition in decades to come. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us in many places like iTunes and SoundCloud. And we invite you to stream our program from our VOA Asia Facebook page and also our website at voanews.com. We'd also love to hear from you. You can write to us either through VOA Asia Facebook or send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We can also be heard on the radio through much of Asia, including Singapore, MediaBiz Radio at Temasek Polytechnic. Thanks for carrying our program and everyone there who is listening today. Our thanks, too, go to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Jonah Cummings, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.